Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 2003.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be across the cosmos. I'm Art Bell, and this is the weekend version of Coast to Coast AM. I'm honored to be here. It's great to be here. Actually, an awful lot going on. Boy, is there a lot going on. And with Coast to Coast last night being entirely caller-driven, I didn't cover any of it until now. Let us first observe the normally, and not to disappoint us, depressing news tonight. From Baghdad, nervous Baghdad parents kept their children at home, no school on Saturday. Normally they have it. Because warnings of an insurgent day of resistance, but they say not too much happened as the daily death toll continues from Baghdad. A woman said to have snapped, that's in quotes, she snapped from stress of some kind, drove her car with three children inside to pass a police checkpoint on Saturday and rammed it right into a place where the president had been giving a speech. That's usually frowned upon and certainly was in this case, too. Boom, right into the building. Big Bear, California, a good friend of mine here has some relatives with him because they were ejected from Big Bear as a fire moved toward that town. The massive blaze creeping toward Big Bear, for one, came to a standstill Saturday, thank God, prompting fire officials to let many residents return home finally. It's lying there right now, not doing anything, said the Big Bear fire chief, but the threat remains very real. Of course, it's getting cold up there. There's been some drizzle, some rain. We've had it as well here in the desert. Very good friend of mine, a ham radio operator, has been working a generator for Fox Television, doing the coverage up behind San Bernardino. Hello, Greg. Up and down the mountain, Greg's been going with his generator for Fox. China plans, now check this out. China plans within 5 years to launch a probe to the moon, this following the successful orbiting of China's first astronaut. They're going to go to the moon. And you've almost got to wonder the way China is moving and the speed, you know, the speed with which they're moving on their space program, whether they might not just beat us to Mars and plant a big red flag right in the middle of Sidonia or something. And they would. What about us? What about our space program? Well, kind of on hold. The astronauts are sort of huddling right now inside their spacecraft trying to avoid what we're about to talk about in a moment. The water was clear. There was no indication of any danger. A 13-year-old surfer went out into the waves with her best friend and her friend's mother. But while she was lying on the board off Kauai's north shore, a shark appeared, took off her left arm just below the shoulder, and left. Sharks. All right, I have not had an opportunity to speak with you about what we're going to talk about to some degree tonight yet, and it's been eating at me. Our sun, the sun. Do this. Go up to coasttocoastam.com. Look in the upper left-hand corner. You'll see Art's webcam, and I swiped a picture, today's photograph of our sun, from Space Weather, I think it was. And you've got to see this. The sight you're going to see is obviously from a NOAA satellite, and it's a picture of our sun and the sunspot. The sunspots were so incredible you could look through the smoke, and we got plenty of that here in the desert, by the way, from the fires. And you could see the sunspots. You didn't need a pair of frosted glasses. We had so much smoke here from the fires, you could look directly at the sun, and these sunspots are extremely visible. Well, here's a good close-up picture for you on my webcam. Go to the upper left-hand corner of the website, click on it, and take a look at this. Oh, my. These are monstrous sunspots. Monstrous. We had a mega flare, what's called a mega flare, up above the X range, and then we had an X flare that rivaled the strength of the mega flare. Boom, boom, like that, at the Earth. We have been slammed. Auroras have been photographed as far south as Houston, midway through one of the most unusual solar events ever recorded in all of history. Now, we go through 11-year cycles with the sun, or 22-year cycles. You can look at it either way. And we're now on the downside, way on the downside of a cycle. The sun should be resting easily. There shouldn't be all these gigantic, just monstrous flare sites, coronal mass ejections and flares, boom, 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 one after another, some very severe. In fact, the skies here in the desert were blood red last week, blood red skies from the aurora. So we're getting very much more than expected radiation levels Thursday, Friday, Saturday, today. You can imagine how it's affecting communications on the shortwave bands. The Japanese lost a communications satellite on. The FAA was warning airline passengers flying north of the 35th parallel they could expect to accumulate the equivalent of two chest x-rays for every hour they were in the air north of the 35th parallel. The astronauts aboard the International Space Station remained in the craft's living quarters, which offer the best radiation shielding. The storm is extremely unusual, occurring this late in the 11-year solar cycle, long after the sun should have subsided. I'm reading now from an official story. Something is really unusual and going on our sun, and it's wrong. It just simply, how wrong is it? It's so wrong that I actually would like to hear, and CNN, I noticed, had a couple of scientists on, trying to explain what was going on with the sun and basically doing a, hey, don't worry about it, and they're for the most part right. We are protected on Earth from these giant flares by the Earth's magnetic field. But the Earth's magnetic field is kind of like a sponge. And it's kind of like if you were to push in on a sponge, right? It's kind of like that. That's the way the magnetic field is. And it takes a blow, boom, and it depresses, and it stays depressed for a while, and then comes back into shape and protects us against what's coming next. Now, the danger in the current level of activity might be, theoretically, that we take a 1-2-3 punch from the sun, and punch one depletes the magnetic field. Punch two depletes the magnetic field a little further, and then if you should be so unlucky as to have punch three, boom, a mega flare, what could happen theoretically, is that the magnetic field would not protect us. And, of course, that would be catastrophic for life on Earth. It is thought by many scientists that extinctions have occurred, as a matter of fact, from suns very much like ours. Fairly young to middle-aged suns that are well-behaved, normally well-behaved, that suddenly let go. And if you were to get the right combination of 1-2-3 punches, there's always the possibility that, well, it just wouldn't work out so well for us. So we're keeping a very close eye on that. And as you can imagine, it's shutting down the shortwave bands and affecting all kinds of communication. All right. More in a moment. Stay where you are. This article is entitled Warm Oceans Eroding Antarctic Ice Study Finds. Listen to a little bit of this. This now is the Antarctic, right? Down south. This is not the Arctic. Last few weeks I've talked to you about the Arctic, right? And, well, you've seen the photographs yourself. The north part of the world is melting. Washington, Reuters. Researchers said Thursday that they had shown that the gradual warming of Antarctic waters is indeed causing ice shelves now there to melt and collapse at rates that astonish a lot of the experts. The report in Friday's issue of the journal Science, the prestigious journal Science, aims to answer doubts about the possible causes of the collapse of the shelves. The researchers found that warming ocean waters have been melting one ice shelf called Larsen C from below. You see, they didn't notice because the warmer waters started melting Larsen C from below, and the same process probably melted the other two shelves. They're already gone, Larsen A and B. And this has several implications, according to Andrew Shepherd of the Scott Polar Research Institute at Cambridge in Britain. Quote, rapid melting in warm ocean explains why sections of the ice shelf have been successively disintegrated, he said. The fact that warm water is able to reach the Antarctic ice sheet means that other regions may become equally susceptible. The release of cold melt water into the oceans could disturb stable patterns of global ocean circulation. The Larsen's ice shelf on the eastern half of the part of the Antarctic that sticks up toward Argentina, scientists knew it was melting, but it began a sudden and severe collapse in 99. They were fairly certain that warming ocean waters were to blame, but not able to conclusively prove it. Writing in Science, Shepherd and his colleagues say they have the satellite data to show the process underway in the last remaining solid part of the ice shelf, Larsen C. This is very worrisome, folks. They estimated that over the next century, Larsen C will thin enough to collapse. The effects will not be immediate. Ice shelves are floating on the ocean for the most part, so they don't cause sea levels to rise when they break up and melt. But Shepherd and other experts have said the glaciers behind them could melt faster if the protective ice shelves disappear. Well, duh. That could not only help raise ocean levels, but could help shift ocean circulation and world weather patterns. So, I'm beginning to see a pattern here between the melting at the north part of the world and the severe melting at the south part of the world. What's going on here, folks? Reminds me of something. Wasn't it something about fiddling or some such while Rome burns? It's obvious that there is a global change, a profound global change underway right now. Our weather, the ice shelves, the sun, which probably is precipitating a lot of this. All of it is changing before our eyes, and we are very short-lived little mortal creatures that aren't supposed to notice big changes like this. These changes belong to the ages. They belong for they're there for historians to measure and calculate and think about. But not people in one short mortal life. We're not supposed to notice these kinds of changes, but they're occurring right before our eyes. The polar, oh, you're going to love this one, from unknowncountry.com. Oh, by the way, that, of course, is Whitley Strieber's site. And Whitley will be here at 11 o'clock, and oh, what a program this is going to be. So this is from his site. The polar vortex above the North Pole is speeding up, and scientists can't figure out why. This is possibly related to global climate change, according to the Arctic scientist named James Morrison. The increased wind velocity may help explain the extraordinarily warm weather in the Arctic over the past decade, which is disrupting fishing, animal behavior, the way life of the natives who live in the area is lived. It was said they were afraid to take a stand that might make them appear like they recommend some kind of environmental policy, according to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, saying that our whole system is based on the cycle of nature. I keep thinking it will soon get back to normal, but it doesn't. The increased polar winds may be a reaction to the warming global temperature as the vortex has gained speed and strength in the past decade. There have been increases in average Arctic temperatures as well as changes in plankton, jellyfish, vegetation, as well as the Arctic Ocean's balance of fresh and salt water. And it's not just the North Pole that's being affected. Changes in the polar vortex will have an impact on Seattle, for example, since he's there. As the polar vortex speeds up, it will shift the jet stream and could make the Pacific Northwest even wetter. And you guys already get enough wet weather up there, don't you? Now you're gonna really gonna love this one. I don't think the news on this one is particularly out yet, and the news in this case, I'm happy to say, comes from the ARRL, which is the Amateur Radio Relay League. And this, to me, this is incredible. Speaking of fiddling whilst Rome burns, we've got changes going on right now that are massive and profound in our weather, in the North Pole and the South Pole and the sun, and all of this is going on at once. And so, here we go. At a meeting September 24th, it was decided that the site near Gakona, Alaska, you know, the HAARP site, which is funded through DARPA. Remember, we've talked a lot about HAARP. HAARP is aiming these beams of RF at the ionosphere and literally blowing holes in it, creating holes in the ionosphere, for somewhat, what's the right word? Speculative reasons, no doubt, including, in my opinion, military reasons, but it's firing these beams. Well, guess what? DARPA is providing more funding, which is going to allow HAARP to quadruple in size from its current 960 kilowatts, that's 960,000 watts, up to 3.6 megawatts. 3.6 megawatts. In other words, we go from 960 kilowatts, something under a million watts, to 3.6 million watts. When completed, he says, in 2006, HAARP will then be the premier ionospheric research facility with beam steering capabilities that other similar arrays worldwide just don't have. Under terms of its experimental license, HAARP must transmit on a non-interference basis. In other words, they can't interfere with other services, but I'll tell you what, that's a lot of power. And what they do is most radio beams start out as a very narrow beam from the point of emission or transmission and become very wide as they head toward the ionosphere. HAARP, conversely, has a very wide beam at very extremely high power, obviously, as I just read to you, quadrupling in power. And then when it gets to the ionosphere, it's a tight little beam. So they focus all of that energy on one spot in the ionosphere. Now, being absolutely truthful with all of you, if they were truthful with all of you, they have several stated goals to find underground tunnels and bunkers, I think it is, to do mapping, to do experiments with the ionosphere, to determine what they can do to communications or with it, and military, speculative military applications that we've all heard about, confusing the mind of the enemy, all that sort of thing. Well, I'm just a wondering. Personally, with all of this going on right now, our magnetosphere being challenged, our ionosphere in severe flux because of the action of the sun and the obvious climate change that we're going through and the possible threats that lie ahead, which we'll discuss in detail with Whitley Strieber in the coming hour, Do you really think we ought to be fiddling around up in Alaska with something that we're not frankly sure about? I mean, they will honestly tell you they don't know what the effects of what they're doing will be. Well, there could be some kind of chain reaction. I'm not saying there's going to be, because maybe not. But they don't know. What they do could precipitate a chain reaction in the ionosphere, and it could have, undesired results from the point of view of the people who live, you know, here on Earth. Got another article here. I'm not going to have time to read it. It's called Can You Be Scared to Death? This, too, came from Whitley's site. And, yes, you can be scared to death, and something like this can do it. Okay, we're coming up. We're going to do open lines for the next half hour. So if you've got something you want to get on the radio, let's rock.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 2003.
Sound of the river, you're stopping your whole everything. A band is going Dixie, double fall time. Feel all right, I need you to meet me. Man, settle down, it's a quiet little town, and forget about everything. But you know
you're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 2003.
Coming up at the top of the hour, Whitley Strieber. This is going to be a whale of a program. Guarantee it, folks. And tomorrow night, somebody that I haven't interviewed. I have no idea. Been probably the better part of a decade. The man who started me on the path to investigation of UFOs, John Lear. Bill Lear's son. Man who invented the Learjet. John Lear is an incredible guy, airline pilot, now retired. And now that he's retired, he can begin talking about the things that he couldn't talk about before, things that have kept him quiet for 10 years. That's tomorrow night, right here. Here we go. Let's jump into it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, sir. Thank you.
This is Butch. I got a question for you, Art. And by the way, I liked your analogy about Nero, the fiddle, home burning.
Yeah. Well, I feel that way. I mean, all of these things that are going on, some scientists think they can explain. Many, they cannot explain. And when taken together, it really does feel like we're fiddling and Rome is burning. Only Rome, in this case, is what's beneath our feet.
Correct. And my question is, not only to you, but to the coast-to-coast audiences, why is our tenured politicians in Washington allowing it to happen?
Tenured?
Yes. That is a definitive word, Mike.
Well, tenured. Why are they allowing it to happen? Well, because it would be politically, inadvisable to take action that would do something about it, because it would whack the economy, a big one, right in the slaps. But so then they don't do it. I mean, they don't do what's politically unwise. They are tenured, but they're not entirely safe. And if they get us angry, well, you saw what happened in California when they raised the registration thing. I mean, out goes the governor.
Yeah, and you know, we don't count. Yeah. Gosh, you know, it's really too bad, Art. You made a valid point. You know, I'm going to get off the phone so some more coast-to-coast listeners can get on this issue.
Okay. Thank you.
God bless you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, that's the answer. Why don't they do something about it? Well, because doing something about it would mean disruption of the economy, and the one thing that presidents and senators and congressmen get elected for is when the economy is good, the president gets the credit. When the economy is bad, he gets blame, and that goes for the rest of them too. So will they do something that is wise but politically dangerous? Well, what do you think? West of the Rockies, you're on the air, top of the morning.
Hi, this is Dan in Idaho Falls.
Hello, Dan.
We're holding off the supernova of our sun, the U.S. government is, and they're doing it under my direction.
Huh, under your direction, huh?
Yes. That
would make you the supreme, dictator, commander? What?
The top physicist on Earth.
You're the top physicist on Earth.
Yes.
Then surely when you mention your name, I'll say, well, then who's Michio Kaku, right?
He is a distant second.
I see. I don't know.
We switched from
very regal presence to be in. So
we switched from tin to barium because there was a big savings, and it looks like barium causes solar flares.
What are we using the barium for?
We're making other elements with the barium.
We are.
It was cheaper than throwing in tungsten.
I see. So you direct the entire United States government in this effort to keep our own sun from blowing up in our faces. You don't sound old enough to be doing that.
I'm nearly 50.
Are you? Well, I guess maybe you're old enough then. So, I mean, who do you when you send your orders, who do you send them to?
The White House.
Directly to the White House.
No intermediary.
It just goes right to the White House.
It goes through the mail or through the fax to the White House.
So you fax the White House and you say, here's what we're going to do.
I explain the nuclear equations. I explain the quantities
mm-hmm.
and the physics and why we should do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they either do it or not.
Oh. You mean there's cases where they haven't followed your dictates?
Recently they've been following my dictates very well.
They have.
Because they have nobody else that even comes close to explaining what's going on.
Well, it's a good thing when people think a lot of themselves. It's good.
Have you noticed the sun is an awful lot larger in the sky than it used to be?
No, that's one thing I haven't noticed. It seems to be the same size, but rather spotted, you know, like it has a bit of acne or something.
You haven't noticed it's a different color?
Well, yeah, there's been a lot of people have commented on a color difference.
What about Saturn?
You didn't order the color change, did you?
Well, that's just a consequence of what we're
something
in.
Else you've done. You're one really powerful guy.
Well, it's not like I'm trying to change the color of the sun.
It sounded that way.
We're trying to hold off the supernova.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Which, of course, would be very bad news for Earth. How long since you're the top physicist in the known universe here, if the sun were to go supernova, how quickly would we go?
Well, the atmosphere would go in seconds.
In seconds.
The ocean would go in minutes.
So in other words, we have about enough time to look up and go, oh, crap.
Yeah.
Or maybe just crap.
Yeah,
well,
that's
listen,
about
I appreciate it. I certainly do. Keep me informed on what you're telling our government to do, please. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, good evening.
Yeah, this is Dan from St. Louis calling from KTRS.
Hi, Dan. Do you instruct our U.S. government to
No, I don't.
You don't, huh? All right.
Nobody actually listens to me. My family don't either.
I see.
But anyway, I appreciate talking to the master.
Thank you.
And what I wanted to say is, though, I've got a feeling that things are connected, you know, like the sun, the earth, the moon, Mars, whatever, the planets, you know, and our consciousness and all that.
Oh, so, I'd say there's probably a grand connection, sure.
And I think that, you know, we're really, I don't know, getting the planet mad, what we're doing. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, but, you know, I don't think that our planet gets mad. I think it gets even.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, it just doesn't have anger in it. But what it does have is a reaction to what's going on.
Right, every reaction has a reaction, right.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah, but do you understand where I'm coming from? Kind of like I see all this stuff happening on Earth, and then you see all these changes that we're not expecting.
Mm.
And it's like there's got to be a reason and a cause, and these scientists can't figure it out.
So it would seem. I mean, fully half, if not three-quarters of the articles that you read about either the melting going on or the climate change
right.
or the sun going berserk up there, the scientists come straight out, at least tell you honestly, we don't know.
Right, exactly.
The vortex increasing, we don't know.
We don't know.
That's right. Now, somewhere here, all of this, when you put it together, as I kind of tried to tonight, has profound meaning, and we're just sort of fiddling.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I know you're talking about harp, too, right?
Oh, well, I mean, in the middle of all this unnatural stuff going on,
right.
If that's what it is, hand to man or natural, I don't care. Either way, fact is, it's going on. And so in the middle of that, here we go, experimenting with firing beams through the ionosphere. Now, is that a really good idea?
No, wonderful.
I don't think so.
No, wonderful.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to go ahead and give my point across, because I just think that everything's connected, you know, and because you've done collective conscious experiments, like I said.
Oh, yes.
And it just seems like when every reaction has a reaction, you know, and I just feel that the Earth is, like you said, getting even. And I think because of what we're doing to it, it's a very unnatural things that we've been trying.
I appreciate your call, sir. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Nice talking to you. There you go. See, people generally, when they sit down and think about it a little bit and sort of review what's going on all around them, are the ones who care to think about it anyway, come to that kind of a conclusion. So I'm not that far off the mark, because I know that a lot of you feel that way. Now, with regard to mass consciousness, I have ceased all experiments with that. I believe that it's dangerous. I believe it's a real power. But I'm not going to do anything more with it, although I do want to do some interviews on the subject. You can bet on that. I'm fascinated by it. But I no longer question whether it works. I know it works. But it could have unintended consequences. Now, should it get down to the point where something is eminently threatening on a really massive scale, I suppose I could be pushed to use it. But that it would take something at that level for me to begin to toy with what I consider to be an immense power again. It would take something at that level. Something at that level may be coming. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening, Mr. Bell. This is a Blair in Sedona, Arizona.
Howdy.
Hi. Well, my limited understanding of the keys of Enoch might have one explanation for our sun.
Oh, well, let's hear it.
Well, basically, it's a variable star. It's going through an energy increase, which leading to the displacement of this entire solar system, sort of like skipping like a smooth stone over water into a more what we might call vibrant or energetic section of our galaxy. So from the biblical point of view, it would be called the new heavens and the new earth. From the new age point of view, it'll be the fifth dimensional existence, so it sort of merges. And that's just sort of an idea about it, but I don't know if you had Dr. Hertak on or not.
I have indeed.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have to check some of that on the archives on that.
Well, when you, like the last caller, look at everything that is going on right now, and it is going on, whether they can manage to explain it or they have to say they don't know, it does add up to something coming, right?
Yeah, and that's just probably just one aspect. The other aspect could be sort of the separation of the sheep and goats, or the cleansing, the bipolar situation where people are making final decisions. I'm going to be on this side or I'm going to be on that side.
Well, sir, are you a sheep or a goat?
Well, I hope I'm a sheep, but I could be a goat, and I'm still trying to, you know. Dear Lord, if I'm using less than 10% of my brain, can I have access to 100% of my spirit? I guess that's my prayer.
Bah. See you later.
Take care.
Yes, these are interesting times we live in, aren't they? We have received and are living under the curse of the Chinese, these interesting times. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Cheerio. Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
This is John from Springfield, Illinois.
Hey, John.
I got a comment for you about the mass, the people. I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous talking to you, Art Bell.
Take a deep breath and just say what you want to say.
The consciousness you're talking about, the experiments that you don't do anymore.
Yes.
I feel the church has done that for a long time with the nuns that pray for the priests, and I think the church has really done something with that over the years. Don't you agree with that?
I fully agree, yes.
I just want to make a comment about that, Art, and I think it's a real honor to talk to you.
It's an honor to have you on the program. I think that that is what the church does. Of course it's mass consciousness. In fact, a lot of what we've done could be interchangeable with what people call prayer.
Right.
Right. So yes.
Not to bring God into this, but I just think they use that as, you know, to pray for the priests, and it is a real thing.
It's okay to bring God into it. That may be where the power comes from. I don't have a clue.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. I just know it is a power. And I, as a matter of fact, I think it is a power that exceeds, that makes nuclear power in the end look like a firecracker. I'm serious. I think that mass consciousness may have the ultimate defense of the Earth in its hands. That's the power. And could it be God? Yes, well, sure, of course it could be. Could it simply be the nature of the universe? Yes, it could be that too. And that could be from God. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't have the answers to all these questions. I just see the symptoms. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art.
Yes, sir.
This is Gordon. I haven't spoken to you in years. It's really good to hear you, have you back.
Thank you.
I'm calling from Oregon, and I'm listening on KOH.
Way to go.
There's a fascinating article in the current issue of the Journal of Scientific Exploration.
Yes.
From the Society for Scientific Exploration.
Yes.
Or have you seen it?
I don't know until you tell me about it. What is it?
Well, the title is Video Analysis of an Anomalous Image Filmed During Apollo 16.
Really?
And it,
I know there were a number of them, and what does it conclude?
Well, it the abstract says it's a video data of NASA film CL-862 showing a saucer-shaped object moving in an unusual trajectory above the moon.
There were many of those seen by Apollo, and what does it conclude in the article?
Well, it's by Hiroshi Nakamura.
Now, don't tell me who it's by. What does the article conclude about the analysis?
Well, he concludes that NASA has, there's some other film that was taken at the same time that NASA apparently fiddled with.
So he concludes they fiddled with it?
Well, he leaves me with the conclusion
that, NASA,
that there are two sets. There's the film, and
yes,
then there are still pictures,
mm-hmm,
and that the still pictures have been fiddled with, and the film apparently clearly shows this enormous saucer coming down towards the moon in a falling leaf pattern.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Suppose there was a flying saucer that NASA got a photograph of during an Apollo mission. What do you think they would do with that photograph? Well, I can tell you. They'd fiddle with it. And why would they fiddle with it? Because of Brookings. Same old reason. The Brookings report made it absolutely crystal clear that if there was contact with others, the American people, the world's people, would not be told because they couldn't handle it. So do I think they might fiddle with a photograph like that? Why, yes, I do. So that some scientists would be, or at least give that man the impression in the article, that something had been fiddled with? Well, maybe. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Ray. I'm in a truck in Illinois.
In a truck in Illinois.
Yes, sir.
All right. Oh, I hear it. yes, sir.
I just wanted to encourage all the listeners that listen on WLS to call them and tell them we'd like to have the last hour through the week and from midnight on Saturday and Sunday they start putting other shows on. We missed the last hour all through the week. Right now I'm listening on 1200 out of San Antonio with my CC radio sitting on the dash.
Well, that's a rocking radio, I'll tell you. Hey, call up WLS and say, hey there, let's straighten out the Coast Hour, shall we, there, folks in Chicago? We'd really appreciate that. WLS is a fine radio station. I'm sure they'll make the right decision.
We've talked to the manager several times on one of the other talk shows, and he seems to think that they're more interested in hearing, I can't remember the other man's name, but anyway.
Oh, probably, probably all about politics, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, there's enough politics all the rest of the day long. I mean, there isn't there room on most good radio stations for something other than all politics all the time? I mean, politics is life. I agree with that. It's important, but it doesn't have to be on the radio all day, every single hour.
Absolutely. Well, I really want to thank you. You've kept me awake through a lot of nights. I've been listening since about 93, and I really appreciate it.
What kind of trucking do you do from where to where?
Right now I'm running from Chicago to Kansas City. I drive for a freight line.
Uh-huh. You want to name it?
Sure, ABF.
ABF, huh? All right, I've got an awful lot of friends who are truckers. Talk to them on the radio all the time. You guys really rock, and when I'm out there in my RV with you guys, I feel safe. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Arrivederci. All right, we're going to take a break here at the top of the hour, and when we come back, Whitley Strieber will be here, and we'll continue the conversation we're having right now.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 2003. Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired November 1st, 2003.
That would be us, pretty baby. How you doing? All right, coming up in a moment, a very good old friend of mine, Whitley and I. Man, we've come a long way. We really have. Whitley Strieber is the best-selling author of The Wolfen and The Hunger, both of which were made into successful films. His later books, the New York Times bestsellers Communion, True Story, Transformation, The Breakthrough, and Breakthrough. The Next Step details his personal encounters with his extraterrestrial intelligence-type friends. He's gonna talk a lot about the early years tonight because of something he's found. He also examined the famous Roswell incident in his science fiction novel, Majestic. Now, he co-authored one of my favorite books of all times. It's not even mentioned here, called War Day. I don't know if you've ever read War Day. That's one you're going to want to put on your list. God, that was such a well-done book. Whitley and I have been through much together. In a moment, once again, with Lee Strieber right here. You know, I thought about it, and there really is. Whitley, we have been through so much together, so many years, the good times, the really bad times. There have been some of those, some you don't know about. Hale Bopp. Oh, gosh, we've been through a lot
sure
together.
We sure have. Right?
When you actually think back over the years, Whit, it's been a lot, hasn't
it? It's amazing. We have been doing this together for a while.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For a while.
What an adventure.
What an adventure. And I, you know, the first hour I kind of laid it out. We're in a really wild, adventuresome time right now. Maybe in a slightly worrisome way, but man.
You know, I was just thinking of, there's a very interesting take on the solar situation that really comes so far out of left field that people are going to be very surprised to hear me talking about it.
You mean even further out than the guy who was in charge of all this?
In a way, but not in a good way, though.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, people, I don't know, talking about, I don't know, when there's no evidence of something like that. Of course, I mean, one thing about if the sun were ever to nova, we wouldn't have to worry about it.
No.
Anyway, you remember Betty Andreas and Luca?
Yes, I do.
Of course.
Yes.
She had a series of close encounters back in the 70s, and she was studied for many years by a fine UFO investigator, Raymond Fowler.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes, I know Raymond.
Well, one of the – I know back in the mid-'80s, gentleman who was reading one of the books noticed that the star language that Betty was speaking was ancient Gaelic. And he translated the Gaelic words. And it was very interesting, and I've talked about this in one of my books. And now there's a lot of star language in Betty's stuff. Another man translated, realized that the Paul Potter is his name, and his website is ufophysics.com, realized that a lot of the other stuff was in ancient Latin, which, you know, Betty doesn't know Gaelic or Latin.
Yeah, I was about to ask, how in the world would she be doing either one?
Totally, totally no idea. Okay, now, here's the thing. These statements made mostly under hypnosis by Betty back in the late 70s are mostly about the sun.
Oh, really?
Oh, really. About the sun and the sun being a problem and the sun getting restless.
Well, it's doing all that.
It is doing all that.
I'm here to tell you, Whitley, I've been a ham operator all my life. I've watched the sun up cycles, down cycles, up cycles. I've been with it all the way. I study it. And there's never, Whitley, not in our history keeping of what the sun has done, has it done what it's doing now. No way. Whitley, we're at solar maximum now. We're at numbers, indexes at 330. I saw the ACAN at 180 yesterday. Now, these kind of numbers are beyond even what you might get during a solar max, and we're getting it now years down line. I'm telling you, it's nuts.
Years down line, and you know, the monthly graph of solar activity is going to take a huge jump up in October, completely out of the scale. It isn't something that's understood either, really.
Maybe this is the October surprise.
So, you know, there could be a reason for it, and it's an interesting one. The sun's magnetic field, when it's supposed to flip every 11 years, and indeed in February of 2001, it began the process of flipping.
Yeah.
And it, however, did not flip completely.
When he says flip, he means it changes polarization.
Polarity.
That's right. That's a normal process.
Absolutely. Except what's not normal is it didn't finish. It's not on the same plane as it normally is. It's about halfway there. So the sun's magnetic field is not in a normal state. And in addition, in last August, some scientists announced that cosmic dust was beginning to enter our solar system because the sun's magnetic field is not keeping it out any longer. Now, this is very important. There's a sort of a maverick scientist called Paul LaViolette. He may have been on your show. I don't know. You might know him.
Yes.
Yeah, well, Paul is a very smart guy, and he's one of these scientists who is made predictions that the astronomical community has ignored, and then they've come true, and gradually his theories are being adopted. And he says that cosmic dust has a tremendously powerful effect on the sun.
Well, you know, you got to listen to these guys, because the regular scientists are too scared and have too much invested in their careers to make bold statements. They just don't do it.
End up sounding like Pollyannas because they're afraid to draw attention to themselves.
That's right.
And make forthright statements. I interviewed Paul last week, which is, it's still up on my site if anyone wants to listen to it.
Yeah, I forgot to add, by the way, Whitley continues Dreamland. Remember Dreamland, folks, some of you? Well, it's still there. It's streaming every week on the Internet through Whitley's site, unknowncountry.com.
Right. You click on Listen Now on the upper right-hand side of the site.
And you'd get Dreamland.
I never would stop Dreamland. Dreamland was a wonderful, fun program, and it still is.
Dreamland should continue, and I'm glad it is, Willie.
Well,
and I'm glad you're doing it, man.
I'm glad that the founder thinks it should continue because I agree completely.
So anyway, you interviewed him, and
he said
what?
Well, he said basically that, you know, he wasn't too surprised about what was happening to the sun right now because cosmic dust is entering the solar system, and he says that this is process will continue and will intensify. And what's interesting is that Paul believes that the strange, complicated warning that we have received from the ancient world in the form of myths and symbols and stories of distant past catastrophes like the flood, et cetera, and so forth,
mm-hmm.
all have to do with the fact that the galactic core is exploding, and we don't know it because it's coming in pulses, and we can't see the pulse until it's here. In other words, it's something that you can't see light before it arrives at your eye.
That's right.
And he says that their warning from the past is that these pulses arrive every 10,000 years or so on a very exact cycle,
mm-hmm.
and that the Mayan calendar that points toward 2012 points toward the moment of the arrival of the next pulse, and that it will be preceded by a wave of cosmic dust that is kind of being pushed ahead of the pulse, and indeed this dust is entering the solar system now. Right or wrong, we'll know certainly by 2012, and if this happens, then we're going to see the sun get into a very intensely active state continuously now. There will be no solar minimum. The activity level will just keep going up in pulses and in phases over the next 10 or 15 years, if
well,
Paul is right.
You know, Willie, I've observed that when comets come close to the sun, they cause a disturbance on the sun. When they occasionally collide with the sun, they cause a really big disturbance on
which
the sun.
Which we actually saw, the SOHO satellite.
We sure did.
Photographed it, much to the surprise of the scientific community, which said, oh my, how strange,
yeah.
this is against our theories, and it just disappeared.
Yes. Yeah, I know.
They just dropped it.
I didn't forget. And when you brought up the cosmic dust thing, it reminded me of that. In other words, if one could precipitate the sun into real action, then so could the other.
Yeah.
I've got a picture up if you get a chance. I don't know if you've seen it. I just put, just per chance, you know, I went and got a picture of today's sun, the way it looks today. When basically what we should see is a nice, quiet disk. Instead, this thing is riddled with active sunspots. These things are monsters. I mean, Jupiter size, many, many times the size of Earth.
Oh, yeah. They are monsters, and they are... Incidentally, earlier in the show, you're talking about people talking about how the sun's color has changed.
Yes.
Well, what they're seeing is the sun through the aerosol of smoke from the West Coast. Most of those people are going to be west of the Rockies.
Yeah.
And it's giving it a different hue because of the smoke and that's up around, so a lot of it's around 35 and 40,000 feet in a thin layer.
Yeah, well, there was so much smoke here, Whitley, that I couldn't see to the end of my driveway. And what I could see of the sun later in the day was so clear with the smoke that I could look directly at the sunspots.
Well, that's amazing. It's dangerous, even with... Be careful.
Well, it's like dark filtered glasses. Of course, yeah, people should never do that. I'm stupid, but, you know, there it is, and so I looked.
Yeah.
And
you can see them easily with your naked eye.
Oh, yes.
But folks, do heed Art's warning, and if you're going to look for them, go to a site like spaceweather.com and read up on how to safely look at the sun first, because it can burn your retina in seconds.
The best way to do is go to spaceweather.com. They've got superb pictures, better than you'll see anyway. But, you know, everybody wants to look with their own eye. We had enough smoke to make that possible. It was pretty wicked here for a while from the fires.
Oh, man. Down here in L.A., where I'm living at the moment, it's been like we came out here a few weeks ago, and it was like the beginning of the apocalypse. Because first we arrived here, and the whole place went on strike. And then there was a week of unbelievable record high temperatures. And the Santa Anas were not gusty; they were just very intense, blowing very intensely.
Yes.
And then we had this the fires break out. And
yes.
God, you know what's interesting? They have identified four of the fire sources as being arson.
Uh huh.
One of them is being a mistake.
Uh I think it's a lot more than four, but identified
if,
as, yeah.
If it isn't arson and it isn't something else like that, then what did start them? Because, you know, there's something odd about the fact that all of these fires started over this entire area all at the same time. I must say that I read my own website's news. I do not write it, I might add, but I read it every day.
Uh-huh.
And a few days ago, they had a story up there to the effect that Al-Qaeda had been claiming that they were going to set fires in the western United States in June. I mean, make them claim in June. The FBI had sent out a warning to all fire service departments all over the western United States, but the warning memo says at the bottom that we have no confirmation as to whether or not this is true. So they didn't do anything. They didn't increase their vigilance in any way at all. And
no, I've not heard that.
Yeah, well, that's typical of what happens. But my question is this. I'm not so sure that these fires are necessarily all set. There may be another geologic factor involved here that we don't yet know about that's causing this. It certainly wasn't lightning.
No, it definitely was not lightning. Occasionally, of course, electric lines falling will do it, but these were horrible. I've never in my life seen anything of this magnitude. God, it was unbelievable. All the channels out west, folks, were covering it in Southern California just about full time.
Full time. Every single channel was covering it full time.
Yeah.
It was an unbelievable event. And, you know, of course.
By the way, you're in Los Angeles helping out or doing something for the science fiction channel.
Yes, I am. I am working on a 6-hour miniseries based on my two most recent vampire novels, Last Vampire and Lilith Stream, and I am presently writing this.
Have you... Well, then, I've got a good question for you, Whitley. It's off base here, but have you done a lot of investigation into vampires? I mean,
a lot. A great deal.
Real vampires. I interviewed a vampire a couple of weeks ago. A really strange, exceptionally intelligent man who claims he's a vampire. And what kind of research do you do when you write these kinds of books?
Well, you know, my interest in vampires, I think, comes out of my close encounter experiences. I have, however, done, and I'll get into that in a minute, I have done a lot of research into vampires. One of the most interesting stories I came across was in a book called Piercing the Darkness by a lady named Catherine Ramsland, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote the book because she had been following the career of a Village Voice reporter who had been on the trail of, she thought, real vampires, and the reporter disappeared.
Disappeared.
And Ramsland set out to try to find her.
May I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
When you say vampires, do you mean blood-sucking, eternal living vampires in the sense, in every sense that we understand them in the media, you know, the popular media depiction of the vampire? They live forever, they take people's blood, like that?
Let me answer this kind of indirectly.
Okay.
We will not be able to understand a predator that preys on mankind any better than a gazelle can understand a pack of lions. The lions make the gazelle nervous.
Yes.
But he basically never figures it out.
No.
And that's exactly the place we would be in. We would kind of smell them like we do right now. We sort of smell something funny in the air, but we don't do what we probably ought to do.
Run?
Like hell, because they're smarter than we are because they're the predators and they have the drop on us. That's how I would answer that question. There was a time when I would confidently say, no, I don't think that's real, but no more. I've been through too much. I've been so far out beyond the edge. I don't think so.
I would not say
it's impossible.
So we're like the gazelle, then, that sort of maybe just before getting struck, sniffs the air and says, huh? And
yeah,
then it's all over.
Something's funny.
Yeah, something's funny. Oops.
Exactly.
And that's it. Well, so you really think they might exist. And I say the blood-taking, eternal living type of vampire, that kind of vampire.
Well, I've written 3 books about them now, and I find it very, very interesting and satisfying. And I'm really loving working on this miniseries for the same reason.
You and Anne Rice, huh?
Yeah, they mean a lot to me.
Why?
They mean a lot to me.
Why?
Well, I think that there is something very predatory about the close encounter experience.
Oh.
Not necessarily an all bad experience, but it's very predatory quality to it. And I think that my first 2 novels that I wrote, The Wolfen, these brilliant gray creatures that kind of travel in packs and are smarter than human beings, and it's really a description of the grays.
It's obvious that you're fascinated with the whole subject.
And the vampires, my vampires, are the blondes.
Huh. Predators and prey. All right, Whitley, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. Yeah, he knows a lot about vampires. And if you read between the words, I think he was being a little like the very careful scientists that we were talking about earlier. They have careers to protect, and so they have to be careful what they say. And I heard a little bit of that in Whitley.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 2003. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 2003.
Oh, baby, your ticket's punched and you're on. We all are. That's kind of what we're talking about tonight. My guest is Whitley Strieber, and he'll be right back. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, Whitley Strieber. Whitley, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
All right. Tempting as it is, maybe we'll launch back into the subject of vampires when we take some calls later. That would be fun. But there's so much to cover. Now, I stumbled on, well, I visit your website regularly. You're a source of material for me. So I went onto your website, and I started getting all these emails from people that said, my God, Whitley's discovered something about his early abduction that he had forgotten or found something, or, you know, and it just went into all kinds of detail about it. And so apparently something's happened to you, huh?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you the story. I'm going to start in a way with the bottom line. It's this. Since it happened, and I made the decision to write a book about it and to therefore go public with it, a decision I subsequently regretted, and now I don't regret it anymore, and I'm going to tell you why in a minute. I always said, as I say in the book, that maybe it wasn't real. Maybe it was my mind. Maybe it was something else that we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
I have closed that question. It was a real physical experience, and in my strong opinion, was not done by human beings.
That's a pretty radical conclusion to come
to. It is
to
a radical change.
So how?
Now, here's what began the process of this change. It didn't begin with me. Didn't begin with my experience. Began, rather, in British Columbia in July. I received from a UFO investigator. Incidentally, folks, or you may not know this, but there is a massive UFO wave going on in the world right now.
I am to some degree aware of it. I mean, yes,
it used to be back in the 70s when there was a big wave, and in the 50s when there was another big wave. This is as big as both of those put together.
That's big.
Big. It's very big.
Why? What's going on? Well,
the Mars
sorry,
effect.
I shouldn't ask you that, should I?
It's the Mars effect. Mars came very close to us. I predicted last October on my website that I said I wrote a journal entry called The Year of the Alien. And to get these journals, you click on Mind Frame on the top of my website, and you'll see them. Mm. Anyway, will 2003 be the year of the alien? And the reason I wrote that was very simple. Mars, as you well know, came extremely close to Earth, and there is one consistent cycle in the UFO phenomenon, and that is when Mars is closest to Earth, UFO activity rises. And we had this very, very close Mars opposition and a great deal of UFO activity. At the height of the Mars opposition, there occurred probably the single best documented close encounter experience in history.
Oh, can you relate that?
No, I can't do that. Yes, of course I can. I'm not holding anything back, by the way. Not tonight.
Wait a minute. Why not?
I can. Of course I can. I'm telling
you,
I can.
Oh, you can. Okay, okay.
Yeah,
good.
I can.
I thought you were saying I can't. I was going to say, who got to you?
I scared you. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, no. Nobody got to me, and I'll tell you every detail that I know.
Okay.
Situation. Two ladies, they've gotten together for the first time in a number of years. And it's way up in British Columbia. And they decide they'll go sky watching about midnight, around midnight one night. And one of them says, you know, it's kind of funny. They used to do a lot of stargazing up there because, of course, it's like it is out where you are. It's wonderful sky at night.
So they were not looking for aliens.
They weren't even thinking about it.
They were just going out. Yes, we have beautiful skies here, and, of course, in British Columbia as well. When it's clear, it's awesome.
Yeah, and so they're going to go out and take a look at the sky.
Okay.
And they're out there looking at the sky, and they suddenly notice something. Three stars in a triangular formation seem to be moving. Now, the second I heard the Brian Vicky tell me this, I knew who it was and what would soon happen to these ladies. See, I could have told him the story he was about to tell me from all the years of being fed information by other folks who've had this happen to them. And the ladies were very amazed by this sight of these stars. And they were out of the car. They got out of the car to look more closely. And they were out of the car, and the driver immediately turned a flashlight on to scan the roadside because, you know, this is way up in British Columbia.
Right.
You don't get out of a car at night without being sure there are no bears or anything around because it's a much wilder part of the world than down south of here in the most parts of the United States. And she was appalled to see these bright fluorescent green slanted eyes in the brush just a few feet away.
Oh.
And, yeah, and they didn't look like any animal she'd ever seen before. She didn't know what in the world they were. They were not far away. They were quite close. And they both saw them. And they immediately she said, "My God, we've got to get back in the car. Get back in the car." And they couldn't move right. They struggled. They worked. They got back in the car, and they drove home. And when they got home, they discovered that they had made a note. She had happened to notice the time as they were getting out of the car. It was like 12:10.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 30 or 40 minutes had passed without any explanation whatsoever. As to what happened during that time.
Huh.
They had, on the way home, this immense light over the car.
Mm-hmm.
They got home, and they had a very difficult, troubled sleep that night.
They had been abducted.
They had been abducted.
Yeah.
And here's what happened the next morning. The friend comes in and says, "I'm in a lot of pain." And she had something that looked to them like a burn above her coccyx, a significant burn. And there was no explanation whatsoever in their lives for this.
Mm-hmm.
She went to the doctor, and the doctor said, it's a very strange burn. It looks like to me like you would get as a radiation burn. It would not heal. It would not heal. It finally healed up to a degree. Then it started in again. Then it finally and did completely heal by the end of September.
Meanwhile, I mean, how did they report this? I mean, when something like this happens,
they had Brian Vaike is up there, and they reported it, I believe, directly to him, because he's in the newspapers up there as the person to call if you have a UFO experience.
Right,
and so he gets this report, and what he then knows is that there were people in the area who also, at the same time that these women were having this experience, saw these UFOs in the area, in the same location.
More witnesses for the same incident.
It becomes the best witnessed abduction case with physical traces left with on the people who had this happen to them.
And when did this happen?
In July.
In July.
In late July, yeah.
Late July.
And it is a, I'm trying to think if, I'm going to look on my site and see if the interview with her is still available.
Well.
But anyway.
Did she undergo hypnosis?
No,
huh?
No, they don't have any memories, and I don't know that there's any plan for them to undergo hypnosis. They may. It's only available for site subscribers at this point. The Dreamland stays up for 4 weeks, and then it becomes available for subscribers, I think.
Well, why aren't you a subscriber?
To Dreamland? To my radio? To my website?
Yes.
Well, if you want to, please do. I mean, I can't say.
No, I meant you.
I am.
You are, but you can't get in there right now.
Well, I could, but I don't need to. I already know what the interview says.
All right.
Anyway, this is a very, very strong case because it's indistinguishable from a real event because it was a real event.
Because it was a real event,
yes. Of course it was.
All right. Since you are yourself an abductee.
Now, what happened in my case is, let me tell you.
Yes, please.
Right after I had my abduction, actually it was in March, the abduction occurred in December, in late December. In March, I was went to the doctor, I'd gone to quite a few doctors by that point, but I ended up in the hands of Dr. Donald Klein.
Mm-hmm.
He was the chief, I believe, of the New York State Department of Psychiatry and a specialist in forensic hypnosis.
Okay.
And he hypnotized me twice. In those hypnosis sessions, the second one was the transcription was in my book, Communion. And this was the source of all of what for me was very embarrassing mirth and jokes. I mean, you know, every conceivable, even on The Simpsons, I believe, there were these rectal probe jokes and stuff.
Yeah, and it all came from that.
It all came from that. Now,
I know you also had a pretty rough time, wasn't it, with Larry King?
Yeah, he laughed in my face.
He laughed at, yeah.
Because I was always fascinated by this, because I thought to myself, what would these super politically correct people all far left politically correct types, think? They would never dare to laugh at a woman who's a rape victim.
Of course not.
But a man comes who's a rape victim, and they can reveal their real inner hardness.
That says, well, it says something about our society.
Yeah, it does. And it's testosterone-soaked, uneasy guys, very uneasy with their own sexuality.
Yeah.
So anyway, and I think I never listened to that again. In fact, I did listen to it once, and that was to erase from the tapes that I had, except for the master tape, all traces of that part of it, because I found the whole thing so embarrassing. I was going on literally show after show after show, even recently, about a year ago, on Politically Incorrect, and all they did was joke, tell rectal probe jokes.
Yeah, you've got to remember, folks, this was all revealed during hypnosis sessions.
Yeah.
And that's how it all
happened.
Came out. So he took the dangerous road of telling the truth about what happened.
And paid the price.
And
all of these years, I was always saying it could have been part of, in my mind, you have to keep an open mind, you don't know for sure. Then, interestingly enough, I thought to myself, I would like to put the two hypnosis tapes up on my website for my subscribers.
By the way, South Park even did it.
In South Park, yeah. Right. It's so many places you just can't count them. So I couldn't find the original of the second hypnosis tape. And I just couldn't find it and couldn't find it and couldn't find it. I looked everywhere for it. And I was very sad because I thought, well, I can't ever, you know, I've lost everything. I've lost this thing, and I should never have erased those others. And
sure.
One morning, I opened my bedside table, which I open every day, and there it was, lying in the drawer.
Plain sight?
Plain sight.
Uh-huh.
I've been opening that drawer every day for years, and it wasn't ever there before. Never. There it was, and with it was a tape I had, I believe, thrown out. That I had, I used to listen to audio tapes of music that at night, you know, to go to sleep.
Sure.
And this was the tape I had listened to that night before the abduction. And I tried listening to it again, and it was like a nightmare. It was, you know, a lot of old, sort of quiet late night songs. And I thought, I'll never listen to any of these songs again. I threw it out. And there it was, lying beside the hypnosis tape in my drawer.
Huh. So any thoughts on how that happened?
I have no idea, Bart. I can't even begin to explain it. I'll tell you another incident in a few minutes, though, that's connected in a way. Anyway, I listened to the second hypnosis tape, and you're talking about synchronicities. At the same time this happened, I got an email from somebody, just a listener, a reader of my website, maybe, who said to me that he thought he knew what happened to me that night. And he talked about a certain type of device which is used for people who are sexually dysfunctional, this pre-Viagra thing, I guess,
yes,
which is inserted into the rectum and a electric current is sent up into the muscles around the prostate, and it causes an erection and ejaculation.
Uh-huh.
Now, listening to this audio tape for the first time since early 1987, I was appalled to realize what it describes.
Well, it's genetic.
Here is this man, but listen to this man, me, talking, he's saying this thing is being put into me, and oh, I have an erection. Where did that come from?
That's on the tape?
That's all on the tape.
Oh.
Seeing this, realizing it, having no reason to expect it, because I, you know, in my life, an erection is always associated with sexual excitement. It's not automatic.
Right.
And it was that night. Now, until a month ago, when I got this letter from this guy, I had no idea that this type of process, that a device could be inserted into a human being's body, an electrical current turned on, and it would cause an erection and an ejaculation. But that is what is described on that tape from 1985, and I think that could only be true if it was a real event. It cannot be that I made that up.
No, you couldn't have dreamed that one up.
You couldn't have. So it had to have physically happened. They took semen, and they take eggs, and they take semen. They do this routinely. I have got thousands of letters about this from people all over the world. Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs have been studying this for years. John Mack, this is what happens. It happened to me. This is real. It is not in our heads. It is not some kind of temporal lobe epilepsy. It is not an imaginal experience or imaginary.
Oh, yes.
It is certainly no lie. It is real. And that's where I am right now.
Were you, when you heard this, were you surprised? I mean, I obviously,
when I put this all together?
Yeah, at some point in the past, you had heard these tapes previously, years ago.
Years ago, but I didn't know anything about this thing, this device at all. I didn't know if such a thing could exist. And yet it does exist. And it's a device that is used, it's used in animal husbandry and in cases where people have, in fertility clinics.
Then there are some potential Whitleys somewhere, here or there.
Art, that has haunted me since I realized this. It has haunted me. Yes, there are, potentially. And where are they? Where are they? What kind of lives did they live? Or are they living?
Well, as you're well aware, in abduction research, there are a number of cases, Whitley, where women have been introduced to the children that were the result of abductions after those children were actually born. I don't know of any men who have been given that opportunity, but one never knows.
I do. There was a fellow named Jesse Long who had that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And if you go on the Internet and look up the word electro-ejaculation,
you'll get returns.
Center for Male Reproduction.
And that's in the abduction hypnosis tape that you wow.
An exact description of that process is in that tape made all those years ago by a man who had no idea what it was.
Remarkable. Whitley, stay right there. We're at the top of the hour. Take a break. That's a lot to talk about. You know, it's a lot to come on the radio and talk about. That's a very brave thing to do. But in search of the real facts and what's really going on, I certainly applaud Whitley for bringing that forward. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 2003. Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 2003.
Sometimes I'm not bad at multitasking, and during the last break I took a picture, a digital picture of Ramona with our wild little actually he's not wild, he's as domestic as they come, Yeti. He's quite a character, this cat of ours, Yeti. I took a picture of Ramona and Yeti, and it's kind of cute, and so I processed it, and I sent it up to the web, and that's where it is right now, my webcam. Sax is really nice, isn't it? Anyway, it's kind of a cute picture on my webcam right now. Tonight's program is with Whitley Strieber, and you're hearing things from Whitley you've never heard before. You've definitely never heard before about his abduction. We'll get back to Whitley in a moment. You know, Whitley, there's some things that I'm wondering. For example, when you get to hear a tape like that, that's been gone for so many years. I wonder, does it jog parts of your brain? Does that whole experience come back in little flashes and pieces and parts? And does something like that help, or what?
Art, it has been vivid in my mind since the day it happened. It's still, right after it happened, The morning after it happened, I was extremely confused and disturbed and beat up.
Yeah.
Beat up. There were physical effects. I could barely sit down. I had a big mark on the side of my head. I was achy. I really had been through the ringer.
Yeah, you were in shock, actually.
And I was in shock, and I knew something had gone wrong during the night. And it was a terribly eerie feeling, because it wasn't like I'd fallen out of bed or anything. It was really a sense of there having been people around or something dreadfully wrong. I was terribly scared. I'd been scared all fall, because this had been happening all fall. It had happened 3 or 4 times, apparently, during the course of the fall. And I was so, so scared. My marriage was breaking up, because I had thought I was going psychotic. I was really, really going through the ringer.
Yeah, I know you've been through some rough times.
Rough times. Yeah. And the memory of it, mainly of that face that's on the cover of Communion, is still just incredibly vivid in my mind. And it has never changed. Hearing my voice talking on the tape after all of these years,
yeah,
I thought I was more distant from it. It was like a little bit like listening to another person. I thought, that poor jerk.
Yeah.
What happened to him? You know, and yet it was me. And, but, you know, I have to tell you that given that this is happening, and, you know, we are dancing around like crazy, people will write me emails saying, oh, it was the military, or it was this, or it was that, or it was the other thing. Anything except it was aliens who are more in control of the situation than we are or will ever be, and they are here, and they are doing things to us, and they are hiding. You don't hide if you want to do something to somebody that they're going to like.
Yeah.
You don't hide.
I've been a almost a follower of David Jacobs and what he thinks about them. For a long time now, everybody thinks warm and fuzzy. I don't know what their motives are, and I don't know what they're all about, but what they're doing doesn't seem very friendly at all. And that's what an awful lot of people think, Willie. It's a joy time. Welcome down. Get on top of the building. Flashlights. Come on down. Fix everything for us. I don't know, Whitley. I'm not in that group.
Well, I have thought to myself, what might they be doing?
Yeah.
And the real truth is, it may be a question that's unanswerable to us. Unanswerable because they may be so far in advance of us that what they're doing is incomprehensible. But I will tell you two things I know they're doing. They are raping and they are stealing.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two things they are definitely doing. I made something wonderful out of my close encounter experience. But what I made out of it was mine. It was mine. I really, after that, went into, last night on Ghost to Ghost, you were speculating as to whether or not there's a soul. I have lived, I have walked in that world, and there is. Believe me. I've done things that no one, I don't think, has ever really reported doing before. I had a relationship with someone from that level of reality, a ghost, if you will, that was very organized and coherent and lasted for months. And it wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for the close encounter experience, because the close encounter experience shattered my reality. It cracked my cosmic egg, and I was able to see out into a bigger world in which we live. We are living in a little corner of a great, big, incredible world, and it gave me that. The experience gave me that, and if I have to say thank you to them for that, fine. But I would also appreciate it if they had asked me for what they took from my body.
Yeah.
And I say that on behalf not only of me, but all of the other abductees. And where are those children?
My guest tomorrow night, just sliding back a little bit to the soul thing, tomorrow night John Lear is here.
Yeah.
John Lear hasn't been interviewed in many years, Woodley. One of the things that he told me that so profoundly affected me maybe 10 years ago when he said it was that this is all about our souls. He said that. He said we are nothing but vessels that carry our soul, and the whole thing is about our souls. And I've never forgotten that. I'll try to get him to explain it tomorrow night. But, yes, I lean heavily toward the fact that we have them and there is more, but that these are some prized commodities, these souls of ours.
I wonder what it would take to cross the universe or to come as far as they have come. And why, when you came, well, of course, if we went to another planet, the first thing we would want would be genetic material. We would want their
yes.
DNA. We would
yes.
want their sexual issue.
Yes.
We might even want to create versions and copies of them in laboratory settings of our own to study them.
Oh, well, that may be. I you know, that's as good a stab at it as any. And, of course, many other people feel that they have some sort of genetic problem that they're trying to solve through us. I don't know, you can throw an awful lot of theories at what's happening or what, you know, things that might fit with what they're doing, but it all seems genetic and reproductive in
it very much. It's very intimate and very reproductive oriented. I have to tell you, by the way, that they didn't seem to have any genetic problems to me. They were very vital and alive. They weren't sick or anything.
Well, you can leap to all kinds of conclusions that, for example, they know so much about genetics that they are our, well, our creators, that they could have created with us, and they're simply back observing and continuing the experiment. I don't know. The mind wobbles.
Yeah.
Possibilities.
You know, we talk about the dark side of it, and I'll tell you another experience, and this happened not very long. It happened about a year after the close encounter. I've written about it. I think I wrote about it in my second book, Transformation, probably. I woke up just at the crack of dawn, early on a cold winter's morning, with an awareness that I needed to go down to the place where I had been meditating at night. I can't believe it. I mean, that I actually, after this happened to me, I kept going out into the woods in the night. I was so, you know what I was like? I was like a mouse fascinated by a snake. I couldn't stay away from it.
Were you searching for another experience? In other words, were you?
I'm not sure what I was searching for. I was desperate to do something that would help me contain the fear on one level. On the other level, I've worried that I might have been leaving my family unguarded, that I might have been drawn out into the woods just to get me away from my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, but they were never hurt, so I'm not sure.
But you were compelled, apparently, to be doing what you were doing.
So, yeah. So anyway, this particular morning, I knew they were there. I was well aware of it. I could feel it. And the most incredible thing then happened. I grabbed my robe, threw it on, threw my slippers on, my big, heavy winter slippers,
mm-hmm.
and went out into the snow, went up a little rise, and then there was a path down through some thin woods, and beyond those woods there was a meadow. I could hear something in the meadow and see it. I could see an object in the meadow, a dark gray object, and there were figures standing in front of it, very dark figures. I could see them through the trees. There was no question at all. It was certainly light enough to see. It was the pre-dawn. And then I heard this voice, and it sounded like it was inside my head, but it sounded very clear. It was not like a thought. It was like more like if you you were listening to earphones, and you know, you had both earphones on, and it was stereo, and it
yes.
makes it sound like it's in your head.
Yes.
This voice says, when I stopped, I hesitated, and this voice says, come on, come on. And, you know, I was not going to go another step closer after hearing that voice. It was a tough, tough voice. And I thought to myself, if I go down to where that voice is,
uh-huh.
I'm not coming back. And I got a family to keep. I can't do that. And I turned around, and I went back to the house. And when I put my hand on the doorknob to open the door and go in the house, there were three cries from down in those woods that haunt me to this day. They were the most beautiful, most complex, richest sounds I have ever heard in my life. I have never heard an opera singer. I have never heard sounds like that ever since. They were incredible sounds.
No.
Ho! Three cries like that. Ho! Ho! Unbelievably rich. I went in the house. I stood there for a minute and went back up to bed, got in the bed, and suddenly there was the feeling of a presence in the room. And the damnedest thing, I suddenly felt like there was somebody right there. It scared the living daylights out of me. And then I had a flashback to my babyhood, so vivid it was like I was reliving my babyhood. Huh. With the mind of an adult inside a baby's body, and I relived the moment when I first walked on 2 feet. It was stunning. Unbelievable. Arf, what is this about? What am I telling you? I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm trying to put together what you're saying right now.
Well, what I'm telling you is that David has got part of the story. But this is a very big, complicated story. It's as big as our souls, and our souls are a whole lot bigger than we dare to face. That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's got some very deep meaning.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you more than anybody's had lots of time to think about that meaning.
I had to.
Did it produce any emotion or feeling or understanding in you that led to anything?
Overwhelming.
To go back to be thrust back to your childhood and your first steps and all that. I mean,
because the childhood amnesia dropped away, and I ended up remembering to before I was born. I vividly remember now, since that experience, the moment I came into my mother's body. I remember it all. I remember the moment of birth. I remember the whole thing.
Well, right there. Wait. Stop. I, of course, have no such memory. I can remember myself in a crib, and that's as far as it goes. I can remember that damn crib like a little jail.
Or that day, I had no such memory either.
But to remember when you began to exist in your mother, and to remember your time in womb and all of that, I got to stop, and I've got to ask you, what are those memories like to remember yourself in the womb or to remember the moment of that magic moment?
They're wonderful. They're treasures. Unbelievably beautiful treasures.
Oh, wait a minute. That's clearly reproductive oriented.
Yes.
Seriously so, right?
Yes. And what does it have to do what they did to me?
Well, maybe that gets a little closer, actually.
Yeah, maybe it does.
Maybe it is related, actually.
Of course it's related. It's all related. What I'm talking about is a relationship with a mind that is very powerful, that is very different from us, but that is incredibly intimately involved in us. A la what John said to you this is about the human soul.
Yeah.
I'm talking about soul stuff now, memories that are soul memories that got somehow washed up on the shore of my ordinary life because of this experience.
Maybe they wanted you to just understand the beginning of life, and because that was going to be part of the process that...
Why me?
Why me?
I'm just an ordinary
I think
guy.
That's what everybody who has... I bet those two ladies up in British Columbia are probably saying, why us?
I have heard her. I have heard Cynthia say, why me?
See, there you are.
Yeah.
Of course. And I guess you thought about that one hard, too. Is there anything about you... that is enough out of the ordinary when you really seriously consider it, so you would be a candidate for this kind of thing?
Well, yeah, I can. There are a number of things that happened. I think that you know, this stuff runs in families.
I've heard.
And my uncle was involved in the Roswell incident, and I have a feeling that maybe that's why I got in, was picked, because they were already aware of him or something. I don't know.
Well, you're right about it running in families. And once again, that's nothing but a genetic trail they're following. It's a genetic trail. When you talk about families, you're talking about a genetic trail, right?
It's very true. Like a hound that can smell out genes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a genetic trail. And so everything keeps coming back to that. And... Just wonder what it could mean. Well, so on this tape that you've recovered, that was certainly one shocking fact, but I mean,
yeah.
Was there more, better, it must have been so weird to listen to that after so many years.
It was shocking. I was standing. It hit me just between the eyes, because here's the weirdest part of it. Why would I get the letter from this man, the only letter about this I have ever received in my life about this process of electroejaculation, a day or two before the tape appears in my drawer, and then I listen to it? This isn't an accident. It didn't just fall together. There's an invisible presence there doing that.
All for a reason, Whit.
Somebody did that.
Yep, hold on for a moment. Oh, yeah, sure. There's a reason. It's all happening for a reason. Well, you're listening to the experience of a man who really was abducted. Of course, that launched him on a very long, lifelong career, really, which continues to this moment. My guest is Whitley Strieber.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 2003. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired November 1st, 2003.
Oh, indeed it is. This is a piece of music used twice and that I associate with a program on Showtime called Dead Like Me, which I love. And when they start it back up again, you've got to see it. Maybe George would like to take the soul of a talk show host sometime. I don't like TV, but I might be up for that. That'd be a lot of fun. It's called Dead Like Me on Showtime. It's a very, very cool show. More Whitley Strieber in a moment. While we're on the subject of television, I've always meant to tell you something, Whitley. I know that when you were on with Larry King, he laughed. And when I was on with Larry King, during one of the breaks, Whitley, he he mentioned you, and we talked about you for a moment in one of the breaks, and he told me that, you know, you related that part about the rectal probe, and he started laughing, and he said, I couldn't stop, and he said, I felt so poorly about that. I felt so badly about that. He said that during a break, and I thought, I just remembered that, and I thought you should know.
Well, it's nice to hear that.
Yeah, he really, he felt very poorly about that. It was just, it was a reaction. I remember him saying that now. And he said he couldn't stop. He tried and he just couldn't stop. And so I thought you'd want to know that he now feels poorly. Of course, he's done a lot of shows.
He's realized.
On these kind of subjects since then. So yeah, he's got a different attitude.
I was on that show with him and Congressman Schiff, God bless him, who passed away, talking about the Roswell incident some years later. And he's obviously.
Yeah.
Larry King realized that there was something going on and had the courage to go against the government, actually.
Yeah, completely. I mean, he set up a desk out in the middle of the no man's land out near where I live here, Area 51, and did a program there in the middle of the night. He's done a lot on this since. He's got a whole new attitude,
yeah.
I guarantee you. Listen, more about your abduction experience. You write that... You want to talk about the state police a little bit, that there might have been witnesses to what happened to you.
Well, there was a witness, two witnesses, actually, and they didn't come forward until a year later. They were friends, in fact, very close friends. At the time, I haven't seen them in years, but we were quite close for a while and back in those days, and he was a state policeman, and he and his wife were riding home that same night from a party, and they were about a mile and a half from our houses,
mm-hmm.
passing a field, and he noticed what appeared to him to be a dirigible in the field. It was well after midnight,
mm-hmm.
and he was concerned, you know, because there should obviously not be a dirigible around at that time.
Check.
And a big gray cigar-shaped object out there. And he thought maybe it's in trouble. You know, he's a state policeman. He stopped his car immediately and got out, prepared to try to give them whatever aid he could. And climbed a fence and went into the field. And he could hear someone scream.
Screaming?
Screaming, yeah.
All right.
And he began to run toward the object. And whereupon, it lit up like a Christmas tree, as he put it, and came rapidly toward him, making a growling noise, making a noise like something like a motor running. And he heard more screaming from his car. His wife freaked out when this happened. And he turned around, climbed back over the fence, and got in the car and got out of there, because whatever it was clear, excuse me, wasn't in any trouble.
My God, that's a hell of a witness.
Yeah.
Are you out of touch? Is he still alive?
I'm so out of touch, I don't know. I think his wife has passed on, and I don't know if he's still alive. And he asked me never to tell anyone his name, that I could tell the story but not his name. And I will respect that. And unfortunately, he never said, after I'm dead, you can use my name. And I don't know whether I would do that or not. I would like, subsequently, you know, at the time, I thought to myself, well, if he would go public, this would help.
Yeah, but you know what? It's been a lot of years.
Maybe I should get in touch with him again.
You should try. It's kind of like tomorrow night's guest, John Lear. He was working for a major airline. And for the last 10 years, he decided he'd like to keep some regular employment, so he cut off interviews. I mean, I know exactly why John did what he did. He knew if he came on the air with me again, he was done as an airline.
For an airline. It's not going to help you to talk about this kind of stuff in public.
He had already been fired once for doing that, and so he wasn't about to do it again. And I didn't even blink twice. I said, John, hey, talk to you someday when you're retired.
He's retired?
He's retired.
I'm going to be listening to that program for sure.
So he's not afraid anymore.
No.
And maybe this state policeman might.
Maybe he would be too.
You know, you change with age.
It shouldn't be hard to look him up. I'll find him.
Yeah, how you feel about things as you reach the last quarter, it changes you.
I didn't say much about him. I've talked about him a few times, but I've never written about him because if I couldn't add a name to a story like that, I just would have been disbelieved.
Uh-huh. Yes. Well, I'd make another pass at that, I think. So he would cooperate an awful lot, considering that, it was the same night.
Oh, yeah. He would. It would corroborate a lot, and I will try to get a hold of him see if he's willing to go public with it, because it would help. There's no question about it. I could interview him and sort of get a record of it. He was a good guy, a really fine man. And, there's a lot of UFO stuff that happens up there. That area around the Hudson Valley is just full of it.
As we look at your abduction, and we look at all the other abductions and what stories have come from them, there's still no consistent theme other than this reproductive aspect that you're seeing about it all. And
the reproductive aspect is persistent throughout all of the stories. But one of the problems I do have with Bud and with David Jacobs is that they tend to just filter out the stories that are really, really weird instead of they really don't want to hear that. But the actual truth is that these letters that we got from around the world, I mean, the things that happen to people are beyond belief weird. I was actually really a kind of tame compared to what happened to some people.
Well, hey, you know something? I'll tell you something, Whitley, and I have a lot of respect for those two gentlemen, but they have, believe it or not, as far out on a limb as they are considered, and you both of us really, far out, we're considered far out on a limb. If you take something that's just plain too weird, even though you might feel it has substantial value, it's so weird that it would perhaps compromise the limited out on the limb position that you've got now, and you might end up sawing yourself off. So they have limits too.
Everybody does. We're only human. Definitely. I agree with you. But at the same time, I tried the things I've done. We did a book, Ann and I, called The Communion Letters, it's about 120 or so of the letters, and it really is not filtered for anything. It's simply in sort of general subject areas to try to give readers an idea of just how bizarre this really is.
Well, it's really easy to hear. I can hear it all over your voice when you start really talking about the things that happened. The emotion is almost overwhelming for you.
It's very, very much so.
Yeah.
And the feelings I had recently when it hit me that this had to have been real, because the description on the tape is so innocently a description of a medical procedure. It's not something I could have dreamed up, and therefore I had to have been describing under hypnosis something that really happened to me. And what was so appalling about this is that it's now been, there's a child out there. There are maybe more than one child. God knows how many. And where are they? Or maybe it was just some experiment and it was used for something else. I don't know.
Well, Lee, was it revealed through the hypnosis? Could a person from that make a judgment about how much actual linear time went by or occurred between the moment when you were abducted and the moment when you were returned? Was there any way that a person might listen to what went on and make a judgment about the linear time?
Don Klein and I actually talked about that afterwards, back when he still thought it was a crime. In other words, he thought he was dealing with a man who had been gang raped or something by some people that had gotten into his house.
Yes.
Initially. And we were talking in terms of about 10 or 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. That was what he was thinking.
Interesting.
But, you know, the art still, even as we're talking now, the fear that I felt when I woke up and I was in that situation, I remember being sort of half awake, not completely awake, and having the feeling that I was, that there were people around me and I was going out the window. And it was, and then the next thing I knew, I woke up and I kept trying to make my bed appear around me. Because I had been asleep in bed and it would not happen. And there were these beings there.
Yes, your brain was trying to yank itself back
into my world. And I experienced a feeling of loneliness that must be like being the feeling that someone gets if they go to hell, is what I felt at that moment. And I began to scream. I know I screamed because I heard a voice start saying, "What can we do to help you stop screaming?"
That would be the screaming that the officer...
That would be the screaming that he heard.
Gotcha.
Yes. That he heard.
A lot of abduction victims, I'll use that word, have said that something calmed them, that something was done to them mentally which put them in a receptive and calm, pliable state.
I don't remember anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in your case, you were screaming, even though they said, and you say they said to you, "What can we do to help you stop screaming?"
Screaming, yes. It was a very gentle voice. I remember that, and it sounded electronic, like it wasn't a real voice, like it was something that was generated in a machine.
What did you respond? I mean, something like, "Hey, put me back in bed, that'll do."
I was not able to respond in any coherent way at all. I was almost like having a dissociated experience. I don't remember hearing or feeling the screaming, although I heard the voice, so I must have been screaming. And this man heard the voice, heard me screaming, so obviously I was screaming.
Uh-huh.
But objectively speaking, I don't remember that. I just remember these aspects of it. I don't remember the feeling of actual screams coming out of my body. And I remember telling them not to put this thing in my head that they were going to put into my head. I said something like, "You'll ruin a beautiful mind," or something like that.
Nah.
And
so you were able to think somewhat rationally. I mean,
oh yeah. At one point I was, and I also remember this creature running away, holding up in his hand a thing like a stick a couple of inches long that had the stuff that had come out of me on it.
By the way, just for the record, because there will be new people listening, when you say this creature, I suppose you ought to tell them
what it looked like.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, this one was thin and probably about 4 feet tall, and they had big heads, but they were really very sleek-looking bodies. They were rather beautiful shaped. If you could imagine the shape of a child. I wouldn't say beautiful in a sexual way at all, but they were something very graceful about them. And then there were these other ones there who
somehow were pleasing proportions.
Yeah, except the heads were too big.
Okay.
And the others were darker blue, and they were really hard to see. There was something about them that made it hard to see them, like they weren't entirely in this world. I just don't know how to describe it. Or they were made out of electricity or something. They just didn't. You just couldn't really look at them. I got the impression of a lot of flaps on this, on the clothing and things. And
can you recall ever touching one of them?
Yeah, I asked them if I could smell them, and one of them said, "Really? Oh, okay, I can do that," and held its hand in my face.
Really?
Yeah.
And the odor?
I remember a cinnamon sort of odor. It was very mild. It wasn't a very strong odor.
Huh. And the touch?
There were things I remember most strongly about the touch was not at that moment. I don't remember much about it. But I remember other times when they touched me, it sent a pulsating kind of energy through me that made it impossible for me to move. Huh. It didn't feel bad, though. It wasn't unpleasant. In fact, it was a rather pleasant sensation. If you didn't mind not being able to move in the presence of monsters, you were fine.
Huh.
But I was not fine, however.
Yeah, obviously not.
No.
Do you remember their attitude? Were they...
Yes. They were sardonic. The ones with the big eyes and the sort of graceful were sardonic and very like a military unit. The other ones seemed to have a sort of sense of humor. They were much different. They didn't. The ones that were hard to kind of scope out were seemed a little nicer.
Are you convinced they were both biological beings?
I have no idea of what they were. I don't know if they would even be called biological beings in the sense that we are. But obviously they're damned interested in biology, that's for sure.
Yes. Did it appear as though one was subservient to the other?
Yeah, I had the feeling that the dark blue ones somehow or another worked for the others.
Worked for the others.
Yes.
Do you remember the area and the size of the area that you were in and its description?
It was a little room, and it seemed messy. It seemed dirty, and that concerned me a lot because they were doing things to my body in it, and it wasn't the kind of place that you like a doctor would have at all.
Were you aware you were on a spacecraft? Or
No. It was more like if you'd asked me at that moment, I would have said I was in a tent.
In a tent?
Uh-huh. That's how it felt. In a dirty little tent. That's how it felt.
Wow. You didn't have any thoughts, did you, that our military or any earthly anything was part of this?
Art, that's a complicated question.
Oh?
And it's complicated because it has to do with my early life. And there is a connection of some kind, and no question in my mind whatsoever about that. But I don't think that it was them that night, no. I don't think so.
That's what I meant. That anything
that
you saw or experienced reminded you of anything at all earthly?
Well, I mean, I just said it seemed like it was in a tent.
I
was a person who had an interest in UFOs and stuff when I was a kid.
Well, I guess
my brother had sent me a book about them for Christmas, which I had not yet read.
I meant the hand of man involved in what was happening to you.
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely no sense of that whatsoever.
All right, hold that thought. We will get to the phones this coming hour. My guest is Whitley Strieber. I'm Art Bell. And, of course, you're listening to Coast.
Kiss the sun, touch the moon, but he left me much too soon. His lady bird, he left his lady bird. Lady Bird, come on down. I'm here waiting on the...
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 2003.
Well, there's no doubt about it. Whitley Strieber really opened up in a way tonight that I wasn't even ready for. This has been amazing, and you're hearing details of his abduction that have never been made public before. So it's pretty remarkable stuff. And I guess when you do this kind of thing, it's like writing a book. Whitley knows about that. It makes you relive it. Whitley Strieber, and this hour, your calls will be here, coming up in a moment. Here's some breaking news for you from CNN.com. One dead in Iraq Chinook attack, Baghdad. At least one soldier is dead. It appears 20 others injured after a U.S. military helicopter was shot down near Fallujah. Fallujah, is it? Initial reports are saying, I think it's Fallujah. It was one of a series of attacks early Sunday which saw another U.S. serviceman killed when his vehicle was struck by an explosive device in Baghdad at about midnight. A second convoy was attacked about an hour before the Chinook incident, but it's not clear whether any injuries were sustained. So we've got one down, and it just keeps happening over there. Our president certainly is in a precarious position with respect to our presence now in Iraq. Whitley, welcome back.
Hello, Ark.
Hi.
Hey.
In going back through this whole incident, Whitley, obviously it's bringing rushing memories back. And was there anything else that we should be noting that you... that hit
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I think that, you know, you brought up the military side of it.
Yep.
And I come from a family that's heavily involved in the military. In World War II, my father was in the military during the war, and my uncle was in intelligence work during and after the war, very heavily classified, deeply classified work. We don't know much of anything of what he did. Even his wife doesn't know. However, after I wrote Communion, we had always been fairly distant, frankly, but he became intensely interested in me and had me out to lunch at his Air Force retirement village. And he told me in no uncertain terms, he said, that he had worked on the Roswell incident. He pointed me out. He said, this is the key. And he said that he helped assemble the debris that was brought from Wright Field, from New Mexico to Wright Field.
Well, that certainly is a connection.
And he introduced me to his commanding officer, General Arthur Exum, who I subsequently introduced to Stanton Friedman, the UFO investigator, who, and he ended up talking to Donald Schmidt and Kevin Randall, and had a brief interview in their book, but between the two of them, they gave me the information that I based my novel Majestic on. And, but anyway, when I was a little tiny boy, something happened in my life that was not good. I was given an intelligence test and put in some kind of a program, some kind of educational program. I remember very little about it except extraordinarily stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very difficult. And I just have fleeting memories of it. And many of these memories are so bizarre and so horrible that I really will not repeat them. I will not repeat them because I am holding something back because I don't know what they mean, because they're the memories of a little tiny boy who was maybe incredibly confused about some things he was seeing and just not understanding it at all. In any case, it was so intense and so stressed me so badly that in October of my seventh year, my immune system turned off, shut down, and I began to die of various illnesses. I was taken and treated not by a pediatrician but at Brooke General Hospital, a military hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was given massive doses of gamma globulin, and I survived. I came back. And after that, I went back to these classes. And by the time I was, I believe, about 8 or 9, my father had gotten me out of them, and I didn't know he had a hell of a time doing it. But I've always sensed and thought that the whole thing had something to do with this. And I don't know what it is.
It may have.
I tell you how powerful this was. We used to go from into the south gate of Randolph Air Force Base to go to these classes when I was a little boy in a station wagon,
mm-hmm.
a group of us kids. And I had not been out that way in a long, long time. I had really just not wanted to go out there, even though we've been living in San Antonio for about 5 years. And I happened to go out to some kind of an exhibit that my brother wanted us to go to that was in the same general area as Randolph Air Force Base. And there's a big interstate you go back to our neighborhood on from that area on Interstate 35. We were driving along Interstate 35. Anne was with me. And all of a sudden, we were on a country road. I didn't notice going off the interstate, and neither did she. And we went over. I didn't even know where we were. And I was stunned because I turned on like an 8-lane highway, and then suddenly I'm on a 2-lane country road. And with my wife wide awake in the car right beside me. And I turned to her. I said, "Where are we?" At that moment, we come up over a little rise, and ahead is Southgate. I had somehow returned to Southgate, where I had been going when I was a little boy in that station.
Boy, there's a lot happening in your life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and one of the big things that happened to you is, and you didn't want to talk about it much tonight, we won't, but, of course, you have an implant.
Yes,
one that they've attempted to even remove surgically with bizarre, really bizarre results.
Yes.
And you said, I think you're reacting to the last time you were on the program. You say in here, I don't want to talk about it. Except, there's nothing new except, you say, if I was controlled by an implant, I would never in a million years be showing up on the air to do this. Well, yeah, maybe. And maybe there's another way to look at that, too, Woodley.
The door opened, Art. And I'll tell you, I was saying earlier that this the way it happened, first there was this, the letter shows up about electroejaculation.
Yeah.
Then I have the tapes reappear in my life, in my drawer.
Yes.
And then it all comes together in my head.
And here you are talking.
And here I am talking
about it. So
now, am I controlled or not? Did somebody decide that it's time for him to
talk about it?
Many years after the fact, after I've already been burned down by it, and nobody cares anymore?
Exactly, Whitley. So that's my point. That's my whole point. Isn't it possible that you know, if you are controlled, that this, what you're doing right now, is part of that control?
I don't know.
It's at least
honest
possible.
Honest to God, I don't know. But all I can say is that now is too late, because I've been so tuned out. I got an email a couple minutes ago by some jerk saying, "How dare you ask for subscribers on your website?" You know, and like.
People to go to your website?
Yeah. My website has subscribers. And
You mean for Dreamland?
Yeah, to pay for the website.
Yeah, of course.
And this...
What does he mean, how dare you? Everybody does. Bandwidth, there's a lot of... Here's something people don't understand in the modern world, Whitley. Bandwidth is like hard cash. Bandwidth is cash.
I noticed that because the cash goes out of my pocket every month.
That's right. You got to pay for it. Of course you got to pay for it. People don't. They think the internet is free. Where'd you guys get that? Bandwidth, sending the information, costs money. That's why you pay a bill every month. Well, when you send a lot of information to thousands of people, then you pay a lot. That's how it works.
But in any case,
anyway,
the point is this, that now it has been winnowed down to a few hundred thousand people who go on my website every month. And the people who are listening to this radio program, no one else will ever know what I'm talking about tonight. In a way, it's too late. I can't go on Larry King. They'd never even think of having me on there again.
Oh.
Or the Today Show, or or there be an article in the New Yorker, New York Times, or a profile in the New Yorker, they would never touch it.
Mm.
Never touch it.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so. And it's like, it's almost like there's somebody somewhere who has to justify what they're doing. They have to go before some council or something and say, well, we told them, we explained it, we did this, and we told them everything. Only what they don't say is they told us in such a way that nobody will listen. You know, so there's something that we've got a monkey on our back here. There's no question about that. There is a monkey on the back of mankind, and it's invisible. And we have a government that is desperately pretending that monkey's not there. And they say, what is the reason for the secrecy? It could not be more obvious.
Well, Willie, circling back to the beginning of the show, maybe with respect to this situation as well, we're like that gazelle, huh?
Yeah. The reason for the secrecy is something very weird, and probably something we really don't want to be done to us is being done to us.
I've tried to think of it.
And they can do nothing whatsoever about it. Of course they're going to keep it secret.
I've tried to think of it from that angle, kind of like if I was in the government and I knew there was a profound reason why this shouldn't get out to the public, that there would be some, I don't know, uncontrollable reaction, then I might really go to great lengths to prevent that from occurring.
Well, I don't think the public reaction would be that great. But what the public reaction would be, the first thing that would happen in the public would be, the general public would be delighted. The scientific community would be probably humiliated. But the general public would be delighted.
Oh, I don't know, Whitley.
They would begin to hear voices like my voice. There would suddenly be a spotlight shine on people like me or Todd Hopkins and so forth.
That's right.
And you. And then suddenly it would change. And then people would begin to report what's happening to them.
Yes, but why do you imagine, Whitley, that the public could digest the information that, A, they are here, B, they are, in fact, doing abductions,
Oh,
C,
no, they would. I'm telling you, the first thing the public would know is they are here, and people would say, oh, how cool.
Well, maybe.
Then the rest of it would begin to come out.
Exactly.
Then the public would say to the government, well, wait a minute, we want you to make them go away. This is not good. And the government then has to say, we can't do jack about it.
Yeah, and so they're not going to do that.
And that's why it's kept a deep, dark secret, because they don't ever want to have to say that.
Do you think that people like, how about Dr. Stephen Greer? Now, he's really made an effort. I mean, you know, he's gone to Capitol Hill. He constantly works on hearings. He has hearings. He brings the top witnesses forward and that sort of thing. And yet it doesn't break that barrier that suddenly makes people start to move. What has to happen?
What has to happen, are the following. Either an official statement is made at some level of government that this is happening, or an event occurs so overwhelmingly incontrovertible that the media is forced and the scientific community are forced to admit that it's real. That's not going to happen. Because it's clear that what the visitors are doing is not something that we would necessarily want done. Therefore, they're certainly not going to break the secrecy. And the government's not going to break it because of what we just discussed.
Backtracking, how certain are you that our government is fully aware?
Well, let me put it this way. I heard it from the horse's mouth. General Exxon said to me, everyone from the president on down knew it was about aliens within a few hours of our finding the material.
You're referring to Roswell.
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 Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the disinformation people, a guy named Philip Klass.
Oh, I know Phil.
He was adamant, Roswell case closed.
Yeah.
Because they knew how weak the case was.
Yeah, that's right. My case was that weak. I'd want it closed, too.
Exactly.
I watched the government thing. You remember that?
Yeah.
That silly thing.
Stu Schiff comes along, and he gets a GAO investigation going, and the GAO comes back and says all the records from the Roswell Army Airfield
are missing.
From 1947 to 1952
are missing. Yeah, they really did say that, folks. That was the
totality
of their explanation. They're inexplicably missing. And that's it.
Congressman Schiff, I said, what does that mean to you? And he says, it means that there's a cover-up and it's real.
Yes.
And, you know, he said the same thing, in fact, I think, on Larry King. And then the guy gets a horrible cancer and dies, cancer.
Now,
three people so far with bizarre cancers who were essential to this field died within the past 3 or 4 years.
I'll tell you something, Woodley. There's talk going on. You can hear it privately from Linda Moulton Howe. You can hear it privately from Dr. Greer. You can hear it privately from a lot of people in ufology, that an awful lot of people involved in this field of investigation have passed on rather unexpectedly.
Well, I'll give you some examples, since this fills my life.
Yes.
First of all, Congressman Schiff was a tremendous shock.
Yes.
He gets a skin cancer, squamous cell carcinoma, which is easily curable, dies of it because it transmutates into this awful thing I don't even want to talk about.
Right.
And then Bill Mallow, brilliant scientist, an impeccable reputation, one of the great leading material scientists of the world, is at Southwest Research Institute. Superb equipment, contacts out the bazoo, and he'll do anything we ask, despite the fact that the director of Southwest says to him, our CIA client takes a dim view of this UFO research.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives us superb help, analyzes implants for Dr. Roger Lear, even put me in a signals acquisition laboratory to try to get a signal out of this little bugger in my ear. It was a wonderful man. Another one, Jim Furing, works with Roger Lear, a brilliant man, a tremendous scientific reputation. Both of these men dead within 3 months of each other.
Mm-hmm.
One with a cancer of the pancreas that came out of nowhere. The other, Bill Mallow, with two different kinds of leukemia at the same time. No doctor, the doctor's never seen anything like it before.
All right. Well, I'm just saying that and a lot more.
And it goes on.
There's a lot of talk going on, Whitley. A lot of talk. Kind of private right now, but there's a lot of it. All right. From the high desert, my guest is Whitley Strieber. We will go to phones when we get back. This, of course, in the nighttime, is Coast to Coast AM. Proud to be here. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 2003. To Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from November 1st, 2003.
Yes, actually a night with Whitley Strieber like you've never had before. A very, very interesting evening. We will get to the phones in this next segment, I absolutely promise. I get these great computer messages from all of you. Call Fast Blast. You can send me one up on the website. And I thought this one from Meredith was really good. Meredith says, kind of curious if the author thought the movie, meaning the author, meaning, of course, Whitley, thought the movie Communion starring Christopher Walken was an accurate representation of his experience or close or, you know, it's a good question. A lot of people would want to know that, Whitley.
Well, the stuff that went on between me and my family is pretty accurate in there, but the alien thing is not. I don't know if anyone could ever make a movie that captures... He captured sort of the ambiguity of the way I felt toward the end fairly well, but the emotional impact of it was so overwhelming, and the movie doesn't even come close.
Yeah.
And as far as the factual accuracy, I just don't know. I don't know.
Yep. Well, you're not the only person to have said that.
You know, something incredibly creepy occurred to me during the break, and that is I was thinking about all the letters from women talking about eggs being removed and,
oh, yes,
and these things that were pressing something against my stomach. And, of
yes,
course, and men having what happened to me happened to them. And I thought to myself, what if these children are here among us? What if they are somehow or another... But Hopkins talks about hybrids, but I think that's maybe not what it's about. Maybe it's not only about the human soul, but about their soul.
Yes.
And maybe they are literally integrating themselves into our world in human bodies, but inside it's somebody very different.
Well, I hate to use the I word, but... maybe that's the way an invasion happens that you never notice.
That you never notice, exactly. that, and, you know, where would they be going? I mean, they would be going into places of government, for example, and there would be, like, you know, I had a time in my life when I ended up trapped between the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and the National Security Agency. And it was a mess. I mean, they were basically asking me questions and then trying to find out. The Senate guys were trying to pry out of the NSA whether or not they knew anything about this and using and coming to me and asking me questions that they would then use in these meetings. And I didn't get much inside information. I could tell from the questions that they thought that somebody in the government knew something that they weren't telling the Senate about, either UFOs or abductions or something. But it occurred to me that if they wanted to keep this secret, the place they would go would be into the government. They would be in the government. They would be the actual keepers of the secret. And I thought to myself, you know, when somebody like Stephen Greer struggles to get this out of the government, maybe he's not really even asking the government. Maybe he's asking the aliens themselves without realizing it.
Yeah, that could be. Look, we've done so much here. I want to give you a chance. I know you've got some things to promote. Your book, The Key, and the Communion Letters, right? They're available only on your website.
On my website, yeah, that's right. I had forgotten all about that, but it's true. The actual thing, if I want to promote anything, if anyone is interested, my website, I think, is a fabulous website. It has daily news of the edge. Every day they put up a whole new set of stories. It is, for example, the only general media place where you could get really solid news about the sun for the longest time until long after it had really started blowing off.
I'll tell you right now, that's why I go there.
Well, thank you.
and I use a lot of material.
Yeah, well, good. Good. Keep on. Keep right on using it.
Okay.
And it's a very special and unique website because it takes, like, UFOs seriously, and they bother to fact-check the stories. It's not one of these sites where any damn thing that looks kind of interesting and weird and scary gets popped up
there. No, it's got good...
Yeah.
What's the word? It's got good science behind all the stories.
And
they're not flaked out stories. This is really what's going on, folks. That's why I go there.
Yeah.
And it's unknown country.
Unknowncountry.com.
Unknowncountry.com. Okay.
Right.
Consider it promoted. We're going to take a couple calls or they'll string me up. West of the Rockies, you're on air with Whitley Strieber. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
I have a quick question for your guest.
Sure.
Mr. Strieber, you're obviously familiar with the Travis Walton incident.
Yes, very much so.
How do you compare what he went through to what you went through? And also, Art, do you expect to have him on as a guest in the future sometime?
I can certainly go back to Travis if you think there's a need for it. We had his story told in great detail, not just with Travis, you'll recall, but with Travis's boss as well. I mean, that's a really well-witnessed case.
Yes.
So, Whitley, go ahead and comment on it.
First about the Travis Walton story, A, I've met Travis Walton, and I would stand by that as being an entirely true story. He is telling it as best he can,
just
as I am telling my story.
A number of lie detector tests, by the way, for a whole group of people, not just Travis.
It's an established, a very well-witnessed and established story. This happened to this guy. And how you compare the two, gosh, that's a good question. It's almost as if there are more than one type of being here and different ones do different things.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a way, Travis's experience is a much grander experience. Mine was very kind of down and dirty by comparison, I guess. and you'd almost think that it was somebody else, and yet at the same time, the description of the beings is not all that dissimilar. It's like, but you know, this is a big world we live in. If we went to another planet, and say, Chinese scientists abducted people and examined them,
mm-hmm.
and American scientists and astronauts did the same thing,
mm-hmm.
their approaches would be entirely different.
Yes, of course. In some ways, I look for positive areas of this, too, and that we are the center of attention of so many apparently different groups of people who are way beyond us.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting in a way.
It gives you the feeling that there must be more about us. We must be more interesting than we think.
Well, that's right. What
or
do we
smell better, maybe.
Something about
it's
us, right,
better.
Is good. First time caller line, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Hi. Hello?
Yes, how you doing?
Okay, sir.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my first time caller from Rochester, New York.
Yes.
The question I have for Whitley is, he makes reference to David Jacobs earlier on the show as of late here.
Yes.
Is that the movie referring to the Jacobs Ladder?
No. David Jacobs is a UFO investigator.
Yeah, he's a UFO investigator whose position is that everybody out there probably ought to take a step back and not be damn sure that these visitors have our best interests in mind. You know, he takes the very, I think, reasonable position that it's their best interest and that their best interest may not coincide with our best interest. In other words, they may not be the warm, friendly folk that a lot of people hope and believe they are. And I give it a 50% possibility, at least.
Well, right.
Yeah. So that's who David Jacobs is. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Hello.
Hey, Art, how you doing?
All right.
Hey, real quick, I'm a former board operator, WTAD, in Quincy, Illinois.
All right.
7 years ago, I got turned on to your show with the Yeti call, I think, was the big thing that night.
Ah, yes.
But, Mr. Strieber, I got a question about, I don't know if you heard about this W-mapping thing going on, about this dark matter, and maybe a possibility is these people are trying to tie us into maybe their ability to transcend both those realms. Got any comments on that?
Well, first of all, the whole issue of dark matter and dark energy is a huge one because that we're actually talking about most of the material in the universe, and we have never even seen it, number one. Number two, there was a really interesting discussion going on right now in physics about so-called brain, that's B-R-A-N-E, worlds, which are real physical worlds that exist in the same space that ours exists.
Yes, you know what, I'm going to have a guest on that.
Well, see, if these are folks are coming from such worlds, it means that the physics of their worlds is very, very different from ours, mm-hmm. and that they may be coming from so close to us. You know, I had on that they're literally right here. I had the Astronomer Royal on Dreamland a couple of months ago, Sir Martin Rees. And he said a very, very interesting thing in the interview. He said that that as we understand it, the barrier between these parallel universes would be so impossible to cross that it would take all of the energy mm-hmm. in our universe to enable us to cross the barrier to another one.
Yes.
But maybe the physics of another universe are different. And it's not true that the barrier is so difficult to cross from them, their direction.
Well, moreover, if you listen to the likes of, for example, Michio Kaku, Dr. Kaku.
Gosh, he's a great.
Yeah, sure he is.
I love listening to him.
And, thank you. And he will quickly tell you that a Type 3 civilization, which is not outrageous to contemplate if life is common everywhere, that there are type 3s, would easily have the kind of power you just described at their fingertips and could manipulate that kind of opening and that kind of travel. So, not so outrageous. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Hello.
Hey, Art.
Yes.
Whitley. Hey, thanks for doing what y'all do.
Very welcome.
The story about the woman in Canada that started with them seeing three stars that looked like they were moving, that sounded really familiar to me. I wanted to relate a quick story and ask for comments. You know, I was out watching the Leonid meteor shower a few years ago, and I saw just that. It looked like three satellites, you know, up in the sky, but in a perfect triangle moving. I'd never seen that before. And I did some research on the web and found reference to some top-secret Navy satellite, NOSS, supposed to look like that, and I wonder, do you think that could be what we're seeing, or do you think the Navy could be involved in this, or could that be a cover story? Anyway, that's what I had to say.
Well, it's a good say. Whitley, there is something apparently like that, or what?
Well, I didn't know about the satellite, but of course, in this particular case, in the case in British Columbia, these lights became much larger and eventually were virtually right at ground level, so it certainly wasn't a satellite in that case. I would not be comfortable if I saw three stars
moving unison.
Because that, to me, means the grays, that's how they show up very often.
The only setting I've ever had, of course, is of a triangle, and damn, it was close. Let's see if I can squeeze one more in. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Whitley Strieber. Hello.
Hi, this is Linda in Los Angeles.
Hey, Linda.
Hi, it's such an honor to talk to the two of you at the same time.
Thank you.
Whitley, I just want to thank you very much for being as courageous as you are to have done what you've done with your life, with your experiences, because my earliest recollection in my lifetime was being a baby in my crib and seeing the face of the being that was on your book, Communion, peering down at me. Hmm. And, you know, how a baby will flail their arms and scream and kick and start screaming and stuff. I was waiting for my parents to come and rescue me, but they never did. And I just have to tell you that when I saw the face of that being for the first time on the cover of your book, I nearly went to my knees in the bookstore. And I just wanted to thank you very much.
Ma'am, hold on a sec. I wonder, Whitley, I've heard that, what this lady just said about almost going to her knees in the bookstore when she saw the photograph. I've had people tell me that many times, and I'm not the author of that book. You are.
I've heard it hundreds of times.
I bet.
And the people have called and, I mean, have written me many, many letters that their earliest memory of this was seeing this face peering at them in the when they were in the crib as a baby. That's a very common experience.
I'm not kidding, ma'am. I the reason I said that is because I've had so many of those emails myself.
Yeah.
Just like your words.
Yeah, and it's been kind of an interesting, you know, having had those same type of abduction experiences that you've written about and that many other people have written, that other people have had, you know, having to learn how to live with that and find a frame of reference to put it all into when there really is none. You know, it's a challenge to live your life that way and to try to live in the real world at the same time, you know, do your job every day and all this other kind of thing. And then sometimes you'll maybe try and trust somebody enough to tell them that you've had the experience and they'll look at you and get mad at you and say, that's never happened to you before.
You know something, Art?
Mm-hmm.
That I just want to, we're getting ready, I think we're getting toward the...
Yeah, we are, we are.
Do you know...
so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much.
Yeah. That Art, that Bud Hopkins has published a book, a new book. I was just thinking about him and Dave Jacobs, and I ran a Google search on them, and to my amazement, there's a book called Sight Unseen.
I know. I just interviewed him, Whitley.
Oh, you did?
Oh, I did. I had David Jacobs on, and I got this phone call at the last minute, and Bud called me and said, hey, could I be on with David for an hour? Well, it ended up he stayed on 2 hours.
Listen to something. This is from the description of their book.
Fire away.
We were apropos of us talking about whether or not these people could actually be in human form and among us. This is apparently something from Sight Unseen. Three young women unknown to each other are mysteriously summoned to quote-unquote job interviews. In ordinary office settings, they encounter human-looking beings who lead them into baffling UFO abduction experiences. And I just thought to myself, is that a statement about the future?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But Bud was very anxious to be on with David. It was really a last-minute thing. And so, yes, they're deeply into this, and I get the feeling, Whitley, that that's what they think might be going on. So it's kind of like you hit on it just at about the time they hit on it, and maybe that's a dawning reality.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I don't know how to thank. As always, this was really special tonight. Whitley.
Well, thanks.
And so thank you, my friend. And everybody go check out Dreamland. It streams on the net. You can get to it at unknowncountry.com. So, Whitley, thanks, buddy.
Thank you, bro. It's been great. And it always is, Art.
Good night.
Good night.
That's it. That's Whitley Strieber. Maybe like you've never heard him before. Well, that's Coast for a Saturday night, and what a Saturday. Boy, I'll tell you, Ghost to Ghost was great, Whitley was great, and coming up tomorrow night, for the first time in a decade, we're talking about John Lear on the radio right here. I'm Art Bell.
It's 2 a.m.